Today is Thursday, February 3rd, 2022. Myself, Paige Groot, and Daniel Chobani are interviewing Jerome Cudera about the Garden City Arena. So, Jerome, can you tell us about yourself?
I grew up in the Queenston neighborhood in St. Catharines. Moved here in 1974. I was a young kid. Lived here, was an active member of Westminster United Church, went to Connaught Public School. Back in those days, we didn't have much in terms of activities to do, so we had the Cub Scouts in the area. Every Friday nights, we'd go down to, you know, Garden City Arena to cheer on the St. Catharines Falcons, and that was very enjoyable for us kids. Like, you know, there'll be groups of us, like, from school, like, five or six of us friends. I think we paid $1.50 to watch a Friday night Falcons game. We all thought they were NHL superstars, but we didn't know any difference, and we'd grab a hot dog across the street afterwards, and got to stay up till 11 o'clock on Friday night. So that was my childhood. After that, I went to the St. Catharines Collegiate, U of T. I now have a career in IT, but I still volunteer here at Westminster Church. I'm here today to we help out with the books and things like that. I have a good relationship with the people here, and I think from our pastor, Reverend Dr. Paul Miller, he's the one that suggested, hey, maybe we connect. And I have some stories to tell, of course, about growing up here in the area, including the Garden City Arena.
How would you describe your relationship with the neighborhood here?
Because we're, I spent 16 years living here, like in this whole neighborhood, let's say the Queen Street neighborhood. Do I know anybody that lives here now? I think not too much, but we still give a lot of our time and effort, because I'm part of the church, Westminster Church here, really donates time, donates their efforts towards the community, whether it be running the homeless shelter that we have in our church. So I'm joined at the hip with our church here, and keeping, you know, really in line with, you know, the people in the neighborhood, the businesses in the neighborhood. I'm very familiar with it. I used to have, you know, 10, 20 family and friends that live within an arm's reach of each other, but now I don't really know too many people that live here. But again, I know the community very, very well in terms of businesses, the people that come and go into the homeless shelters, the people that attend the church. I support the businesses here as well. Haven't really gone into the Garden City or Jack Lake Arena in a while because of, you know, pandemics and everything else. But again, I still consider it my home turf type of thing.
It seems like you're really, really involved in the Queenston community, definitely. How did the neighborhood look and feel when you were growing up there?
Well, back then it was much different. I went to Connaught Public School, just down the road from where we are now. And I remember at that time, it was much different. We had the General Hospital, which was the big building on top of the street, which probably employed a million people, we thought back then, lots of doctors, nurses. There was a bank, there's a TD Bank just across the street from there. Obviously the school, my parents worked and lived nearby. The church was here. As a young kid, that's all you know, that's your neighborhood. So that and to us, we had everything we needed. There was a corner store that you can go in with a nickel and come back with a whole bunch of calories, gum, candy, and everything else. It was fine. As I became a teenager, we started realizing that, you know, it was inner city St. Catharines. We didn't have, you know, the big houses, we didn't have the nice cars, everything else, but to us it was always home. When we fast forward to today, like, you know, maybe 30 years later, the neighborhood has changed. Like the hospital is gone. Let's call it, it's an eyesore right now. It's been like that for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. The main building that's still here is our church that I'm a part of, Westminster United Church, and that's also changed as well. Even though it looks the same, we don't have 500 people attending every Sunday. I don't think any church can say that today. We have maybe 50 people. There's a stat I learned was that, you know, the neighborhood itself, it's almost a third of the residents here are single parent income, so it's a single parent dwelling. So it that's changed. When I went to Connaught Public School, I thought everybody had a mom and dad. You know, I went to birthday parties almost every couple of months. Somebody would have a party, somebody would have friends. We have neighborhood ball hockey tournaments down the street, like, you know, find a parking lot. We all played. The neighborhood has certainly changed. And I think a lot of that has because the businesses have gone, like the hospital is gone. So a lot of the interest in the neighborhood, there's a Tim Hortons here. It wasn't here when I grew up, but when it was here, when the hospital was flourishing, that Tim Hortons was also, you know, pretty good in business as well. But now it's been, I don't want to sound so negative, but there's a lot of, you know, the street people are here. We're trying to help clean that up. We're trying to be an active part of the community to you know, clean up the streets a little bit. And I really believe that the projects that are happening, you know, let's start with the hospital. There's something that's happening in the church as well. I think the neighborhood will rejuvenate itself in the next few years. Let's say it's an ongoing thing. So, you know, I hope and I think that, you know, it's going to flourish again in the near future. So that I'm hopeful for that. I'm old enough. I'm still young enough. I hope to be able to see that day when the Queenston Street neighborhood it becomes a place to live again, like a good place to live that's solid. That's, you know, that's, but also we have to start cleaning up. Helping the small businesses, and we got to get them, help our homeless people out and get them a place. They may need affordable housing. There's addictions here, of course. We want to clean that up and just again, we'll start with those people there, with the homeless. I think if we clean that up, I think we're, you know, the developers will come back and businesses will again flourish.
I've noticed myself that, you know, with the Queenston Roundtable, and the Queenston community is a really tight-knit, supportive community where people find support within the community and people are there to help each other.
No, we try to help. Like, you know, I remember when we first moved here, we required help. Like, we're immigrants from the Philippines, and there's a lot of people that reached out to us that helped out our family. And, you know, I'm not saying it's time to give back, but we've always been giving back. And again, my focus has always been Westminster United Church, and we have our Pastor Paul Miller, and he's the one that's really getting us to get involved in the community, get involved and see how we can help each other, help the community. If we can help, you know, it's nothing else than just to, you know, like just help our neighbors, right? That's what we're trying to do.
So were you born in the Philippines?
I was born in the Philippines, left there when I was four, came here when I was four. So my first language is actually English. So this, you know, I, you know, wasn't much of a talker back when I was a young kid, and until maybe high school, I started becoming more of an extrovert. But I was born there, but I was raised up here, right in the Queen Street neighborhoods. And then up till I was about 18, then I moved to Toronto for school and lived there for the next 25 years or so. And then just coming back here because of COVID and realized there's opportunities to kind of help improve the community, tell some stories. Again, I'm getting too old now to kind of live a party life, so I'm getting back here to the city. And I did attend a semester at Brock as well, so that's and I see Brock has changed tremendously in the last 30 years. So right now I'm just trying to get involved with to see, you know, if is there a future here in the Queen Street community. I think there is. Do I have a passion for that? Absolutely. I want to see what can be done, take an active part in, you know, trying to regrow it. I probably have a million stories. Not all of them are fun, but, you know, you know, because I grew up here through my teen years, like we, you know, whether it's trick or treating, whether it's, you know, Devil's Night, whether it's going to a hockey game, like we rode our bikes everywhere throughout here. So we kind of know every little nook and cranny of the neighborhood. We knew who lived there, who lived where. Connaught School was a big part of that when I went to public school there. But at the same time, that it's, you know, it was growing up here with all my friends. Like, you know, this is long before technology took the lives of kids and made us stay indoors. We were all either riding our bikes, you know, playing basketball somewhere, road hockey, you name it. That's what we did. And, you know, when I come, and also my parents owned some businesses, some buildings throughout Queenston Street. So there's a lot of memories as well of where we grew up. My mom ran a business, had this store here, bought this building over there. These buildings are still there. Some are being torn down as well. So it's also good news to see that those old 100-year-old buildings or houses are being torn down and somebody's actually buying them and renovating them. And then that bodes well, I think, for the future. And again, I think it all starts with hopefully that, you know, the old hospital site kind of just gets off the ground sooner than later. And I think that will really, you know, kickstart, you know, the whole renovation process for the neighborhood.
Can you tell us a little bit about the arena and what it means to you?
That's where I learned how to skate, first of all. There was always public skating there, the Garden City Arena, Rex Dimers, back when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. If we didn't have a school rink in the backyard of our school, we went to Rex Dimers Arena to learn. There was always a public skate for 50 cents. I remember I'd go there on Saturdays or Sunday afternoons to learn how to skate. And then the big games were always the St. Catharines Junior B Falcons. So we'd go there Friday, and I think it was under $2 a game. It would fill, like, you know, I think 2,000 people would fill that arena. Years later, not too many years later, but the St. Catharines Saints, they were the Toronto Maple Leafs number one farm team. They came here, I think, in 81, 82. And we were told, these are also professional hockey players. So tickets were more expensive. I think they would cost us $5, not $2 to get in. But we still went to the games. And there, then I was getting old enough. I was maybe 10, 11, 12 years old when the Saints came here. And it was awesome to see, like, you know, these are bona fide NHL players or professional athletes that were coming here in St. Catharines. I remember hearing names like, you know, Bruce Boudreau played for the Saints. Now he's now a Vancouver Canucks coach. He's an old man now, but he played here with the Saints. Rocky Saginaw, these crazy names like Bill Dorlego played here. So, like, it's for the St. Catharines Saints. And these became household Toronto Maple Leaf names, you know, a year or two down the road. And every time that a rookie would play for the Leafs, we'd hear him on TV. And I remember thinking, I saw him. He played, like, here at St. Catharines. And that was kind of helped put St. Catharines on the map. You know, so that was fun for us. I have a really fun story. And I'm going to say it's 1979 or perhaps 1980. The Montreal Canadian old timers, the old guys came to town to play the St. Catharines TP's old timers. Now, St. Catharines TPs were a junior A team. I think they were the OHL back in the 50s and 60s. And they had some pretty good stars on there. This is before my time, but there's an old-timers game. Let's say it was 1980. So Montreal brought their old guys, and they played the they played the St. Catharines TPs old-timers. We got seats right on center ice, like right front row. I was cheering for the Habs or the Montreal team because I'm a Habs fan, and because Montreal won the cup the year before that as well. So that's how I became a Montreal fan. I remember I created this sign, this little poster that said, "Go Habs, go." I was dumbfounded that I didn't recognize any names on the Montreal team because I didn't realize it was the old timers. It was like, you know, I was looking for Guy Lafleur. This is before your time as well, but I was looking for Guy Lafleur, you know, Steve Shutt and all the crazy Montreal Canadiens that were playing in those days. But instead, they had old guys, people I didn't recognize. And people told me these were the old timers. These guys played in the 50s and 60s. They're retired now. But still, I cheered for Montreal that game. And at the end of the first period, this guy named Claude Pronovost, Montreal Canadian guy, old timer, he threw the puck at me because I was cheering as loud as I could. And he threw the puck, bang, hits my nose. Hits my nose. I was crying. I think I had a bloody nose, and I spilt my Coke and everything else. And then everybody was just, like, you know, looking at me thinking, uh-oh, you okay? And then at the time, the referee came over. Gave me a towel and said, hey, you okay? And I said, I'll be fine, right? But I caught the puck, and I still have the puck to this day. The referee, I didn't know who he was because he was a referee, out of shape and everything else. It turned out to be, it was Maurice the Rocket Richard, who I didn't know. And he was if you look him up, everybody knew who Rocket Richard was back in that day. I was 10 years old, so I didn't know who he was. Years later, I was 14 years old. I was getting a bit older. I started to research more about the Montreal team and realized Rocket Richard was, you know, like he was the Connor McDavid of the 1950s, 1960s, the Wayne Gretzky, those guys. And I have a picture with him. So I was pretty happy to say I met this guy. Was probably at that time the greatest hockey player ever. Like, this is pre Wayne Gretzky, of course, right? Pre everybody else, but he was already retired. So, and I have a picture with him, and he signed the picture, and I thought, okay, this is awesome. But, you know, at the time, I got hit by a puck. The referee kind of just says, let's wipe my nose for me. Made sure I was okay and walked away. And then everybody behind me was yelling, Rocket, Rocket, Rocket. I didn't know who the Rocket was, but that was Rocket Richard. So that was my fun story. It wasn't fun at the time, but you know, when looking back at it, it was like, who the heck was that guy? He spoke French. He kind of spoke English with a French accent, but he was probably the greatest hockey player of that time. So I was pretty happy. And that's probably my best Garden Cities arena story.
It's a fantastic story. That's just, I mean, yeah. It's terrible that you hurt your nose, but.
Yeah, if we had Facebook, I would have, you know, posted that back then, but we didn't have anything. I didn't have a camera. So I, but somebody did take a picture, and I have the picture at home somewhere of me and the Rocket. So I, you know, it kind of, you know, validates my story. Again, that was, and Montreal only came, the Montreal Old Timer team came here. I was just trying to look it up the other day, what day it was. I just can't get the date. I'm sure if we look in the Garden City archives, it's somewhere between 79 and 1980 that game took place. And if somebody has a picture of the front row right by the Montreal bench, you'll see me with a bit more hair than I have today. I'm that kid.
Do you have any other connections or stories about the arena specifically that you wanted to tell?
I told you, I learned how to skate in that area. I was never good enough to really play, you know, played house league hockey a little bit, but other than that, we always went there to support the St. Catharines Falcons. The other story is we knew a way to sneak into the St. Catharines Saints games because a friend of mine was kind of helped volunteer. It was like a stick boy type of thing for practices. And he always knew a way to kind of sneak into where the employees went through. We'd hang out there for 4 or 5 hours until the game started because we didn't have a lot of money back then. So I'm not sure if you want to print that, but we found a way to sneak in through like maybe the janitor's entrance. You know, we'd come in at 4:30. The game would start at 7:30, 8 o'clock. And we just kind of hide in the cupboard for like 3 hours. And then watch a game for free.
We're really loving these very candid stories we're hearing about people's experiences at the arena. So thank you for sharing that.
Okay. No, that was, you know, and we did that a number of times. That wasn't once only. That was maybe, I probably attended the St. Catharines Saints games, maybe 10 games, and I probably paid twice for them. And the rest we just kind of somehow got in. But you had to get in early and you had to hide or pretend you were a worker. So, that was it, yeah.
you mentioned you haven't really been to the arena much lately. Have you been at all as an adult? Or?
Probably the last time I was there was I attended a friend's hockey tournament. A friend's daughter played there maybe 4 or 5 years ago. That was the last I've heard of it. And then now we all go to the new arenas like the Seymour Hanna Arena and everything else. That's where I spend a lot of my time when I go skating or go watch some hockey tournaments. But other than that, across the street from the arena, my mom had a shop, just like a business just around there. So we spent time there. And another story I like to say is that the business is not there anymore, but right after hockey games, I don't care what, if it was a Falcons game, a Saints game, this is early 80s to mid 80s. Most people went to a business called Tony's Tasty Treat. That was on Queenson Street. And Tony was a friend of my parents. We rented off him a small little business. And everybody would go there for French fries. Everybody would go there for a hot dog. And we'd go in there. And then the lineups were crazy. Like after a game, there might be 30, 40 people hanging outdoor. It was a place to be, place to hang out, especially for us underage kids. Just a place to hang out after the game. That was always, you know, just that was always fun. That was part of the whole adventure for us. We go watch a hockey game at the arena, go grab a hot dog at Tony's afterwards, and that was fun. Across the arena, I could still remember this. There was a carpet store. It was called Wally Remen's Carpet Market. Again, friends of my parents because they ran local business in St. Catharines. We go there and obviously buy, you know, rugs, things like that. Recently, I do park right at the arena. There's a garage right across the street from the arena right now. I'll say Eddie's Garage. We know those people that run the garage, and I'll park in the arena. The arena looks like a ghost town these days, but every time I park there to get an oil change or anything like that, I would look and kind of smirk and smile thinking, I remember when I was 12 years old, I did, you know, I snuck in. Or I remember I was 10 years old, I met Rocket Richard there and, you know, became best friends. That's what I tell people. But That's I don't have any other, you know, just a story that pops out. Like I'm sure I attended other events there. I know our school did some public skating. There must have been one or two trade shows I attended there as a child. No great memories, but I remember just that, you know, it was one of the venues St. Catharines had to offer that you know, you can come in, you can walk in, check it out. Let's say maybe perhaps a folk arts festival in the 80s on a Saturday or Sunday during the summer. Did I see a circus there? I believe I did at one point. Not a big circus, but there was small little events that always happened there. And then that was the entertainment center of our world back then in the 80s, because like the arena did, you know, that was probably the only arena in the area that could house, you know, any type of decent sized venue. So it was always on the entertainment front of our household.
Speaking of kind of different events that the arena had, I know they've had, you know, rock concerts, the circus, some other really big events. Did you mentioned that you maybe attended the circus. Did you attend any concerts or anything else, like any big events there?
Other than the hockey games, and so yes, I remember the circus because, you know, there was a smell, right, of the elephants. I remember that. I don't think I attended any type of concerts. Like, and I don't want to mix it up with I have attended a lot of concerts here in St. Catharines, but not at that venue, like at the newer, you know, performing arts theaters. But I don't remember, to be honest with you, like in any type of concerts. I was a little bit too young to attend a concert back when I was early teens. But definitely just for like family type of entertainment, whether it be a circus, a hockey game, some type of folk arts festival, or any type of you know, family friendly activities, we were there. So it's and there might be some that I'm missing, but definitely whatever a 9-year-old to a 12-year-old could attend, we were there at Garden City Arena.
As a resident of the neighborhood, when these, you know, larger events were going on, did you notice any impact on the neighborhood?
Oh, yes, because I remember when, you know, the St. Catharines Standard, our newspaper, every time that, you know, this is back in the day where we read the newspaper. We had to, because that's the only way you got news, or you listened to the radio. And I remember seeing an article in the paper that says the St. Catharines Saints are coming to St. Catharines. And who are they? They're the Toronto Maple Leafs farm team. So that was a talk of the town. That was a talk of our school anyways. And, you know, if the cool kids went to watch the Falcons, or the cooler kids went to watch the St. Catharines Saints, we all went. Like, I grew up playing ball hockey, road hockey with maybe 6 or 7 guys routinely every day after school. And if something was happening, we knew it. And most of the time it revolved hockey, because that was our sport. That was the thing we liked to play. And you know, when somebody told me the Montreal Canadian Old Timers are coming, all I heard was the Montreal is coming to play St. Catharines. I didn't understand how the NHL worked back then, but I said, I have to go to that game. So we went. So how did it impact our neighborhood? Like, all the kids went. Like, you know, back then, my world was maybe mom, dad, brother, sister, and a couple buddies that, you know, wanted to watch hockey. So is definitely impactful for my life. Again, keep in mind, I was a preteen for most of this. And then by the time I was 15, 16, I kind of knew what I was doing up to that point. And then that's when I, you know, was almost high school age. So I spent not as much time at the arena, but definitely still part of the neighborhood back then.
How do you think the arena's changed over the years?
Well, like I said, back when I first started going there in the late 70s to today, like in the late 70s, it was probably the one of few venues to host in St. Catharines that would host a hockey game, like a, just, you know, like an old timers game, a circus. Now there's different choices, different arenas, more modern arenas, because it's situated right in downtown St. Catharines. Downtown St. Catharines, it's right there on that, you know, we want to call it the wine tour path, like that goes through Highway 8 through St. Paul Street. So it is accessible. It's there. How has it changed? I you know, I don't want to say it's less popular. I know that, has the name changed? Is it called Jack Gatecliff Arena now?
Yeah, it is. It's known by a lot of different names, I think, because of people's fondness for it.
Yeah, I still call it Garden City Arena. I still call it Rex Steiner's Arena. I'm not sure what the current names are, but when I tell people of, you know, certain age, I say I'm going to Rex Steiner's. I learned how to skate at Rex Steiner's Arena, and if we were lucky enough, we had tickets to go to Garden City Arena, like literally adjacent to it, right, to watch the sports there. So how's it changed? Again, probably the last time I've been in there is probably 2015, 2016. It may be in some type of, even before that, I had a cousin that was into gymnastics. They had some type of gymnastics event back then. This is definitely more than 15, 20 years ago. But like, how's it changed? Again, I'm not sure exactly like the, what is it. I know it's just kind of, it's no longer modern, right? It's not the Mecca of St. Catharines as a venue, but it, I think as a landmark, there's a lot of importance there. And I kind of hope that, you know, it will get modernized, because it's the whole downtown core to me, it's important. Across the street from it, there's, again, I told you about that little eatery restaurant we used to go to. There's still shops in the area that, you know, specialty shops that I still go to. One store I'm thinking about is Herzog's. Back in the day, Herzog's was a place to go to buy our, you know, uniforms, to buy our Cub Scout uniforms, to buy sports gear, to buy hockey equipment, then head over to the arena to play. So to me, that's kind of, you know, dear in my heart, that area. I want to see that kind of, you know, continue to serve the next generation of peoples. And again, I still drive by. I probably drive by there 3 times a week. And I was kind of smile and smirk when I see the buildings that are still there. And, you know, I just, in the back of my head, I'm always thinking, I hope this gets rejuvenated, right? And then we're starting with our part, starting with our church to kind of, you know, and I also mentioned that hospital site. I think once that gets up and going, it kind of motivates the rest of the neighborhood, the rest of the businesses, and perhaps the city to kind of let's reinvest in, you know, just to bring this thing up back up to, like, let's say to not necessarily life, but to just make it attractive for future businesses, future generations of people to kind of enjoy.
The eatery that you guys went to, do you remember where exactly that was?
Yes, that was it's on Queenston Street. So the arena is on Riordan Street. So mm-hmm. Where Riordan goes north and meets Queenston Street, on the north side of Queenston Street, that's where it was. It's I'm gonna guess it's number, we own 21, so it's either number 17 or number 19 Queenston Street. It's an empty lot now, so it's easy to find on Google Maps, but it's either number 17 or number 19 Queenston. That's where that Tony Tasty Treats was located. Italian family. It looked like a classic 1950s diner at the time. I think that was there till maybe the late 1980s.
Okay. And you said that your parents owned some small businesses in the area too. Did you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So in 1976, my mom opened up a store called Philcraft, P-H-I-L Craft, short for Philippine Crafts. Imported a whole bunch of, you know, items from the Philippines, wicker baskets, some seashells, some jewelry, some pearls and everything else. Opened up in the corner of Queenston and Ida Street. That was her first location. We lived in that building. Then she moved over to 76 Queenston Street, which was the old one-way part of Queenston Street. Then she moved over to right beside that Tony Tasty Street. I think that'd be number 15 Queenston Street at the time. Had her store there. So there's 3 or 4 locations right on Queenston Street that she owned her store. And of course, with the hospital, with the hockey games, business flourished back then for her, right? Because there's a lot of traffic. Like, you know, it's good to have nurses, doctors as your clients. Unfortunately, the hospital didn't remain there past 2014. But you know, and at the same time, this is the early 1970s, the late 1970s, where the malls weren't quite as dominant as they are now. There's no online shopping there. So this also before my time, in the 1960s, there was no shopping malls in St. Catharines. You shopped downtown. So there's still a generation of people that went downtown on St. Paul Street to shop. My mom had this on the end of St. Paul, right into the Queenston Street neighborhood. That's where her shops were. So it was easy to attract business. And I think she had also good business, but at the same time, that generation of shoppers was just still was so attracted to that neighborhood. So it was again, the time and place was perfect for that time. And unfortunately now, you know, that I think the whole neighborhood, especially starting off with the businesses on St. Paul Street, they're more eateries, bars and things like that. A lot less shopping, maybe some, you know, boutique type of stores. But you know, if most people shop online and go to the malls today. But in the 60s and into the 70s, again, a generation of people loved shopping downtown, as I'm told. Right. But
do you think that the arena played a role in bringing shoppers into the area?
I'm not sure if it played a role, but again, it didn't hurt. Like, you know, if you know, you went shopping on a Saturday and then you can go watch a hockey game Saturday night or the weekends. It's you know, I'll be stereotypical. Let's say mom wants to shop, dad wants to watch a hockey game. It's a win-win, right? It's a let's go downtown. It's you know, the bus terminal down there, so it's everything's accessible wherever you live in the city. That you just, you know, take a bus, it gets you downtown. The arena's there. We lived on just off Queenson Street, so it was no more than a 10-12 minute walk to get to the arena for us, and it felt safe. That's what I really want to say. It felt safe back then. Today it doesn't feel as safe because there's a lot of abandoned buildings, of course. Again, there's some homeless people there, but there's a lot of businesses there that support our homeless. So it's probably not as unsafe as I'm saying, but it's definitely a different time. Back in my day, there was a lot of kids. You know, you walk by a store and my you know, like all the convenience stores from the arena all the way to my home, I knew people. So you know, you could always, you know, say hi to somebody. Today it's again with just the some of the buildings being abandoned, being torn down, or not the right state right now. But I really believe that there is a future, because somebody's going to buy those buildings, somebody's going to build a new house there. It's going to look a lot prettier than it does now. Like I mentioned, that little business, that little diner, it's still a parking lot right now. There's no business there. But I'm kind of hoping as the Queenston neighborhood kind of revitalizes itself, some entrepreneur will pick these places and with the help of the city, I think it could be a vibrant place again.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of speaking to, you know, how you feel as a kid there as safe compared to your kind of feelings now, can you expand on how you feel when you're around the arena? Do you feel like your perception of the space that the community the arena's in has changed over time?
Oh yes. Like, you know, again, back in my heyday, when I go to Falcons game, like on Friday nights, it was all fun, and they would pack the arena. I packed, meaning maybe 1,000 people, 2,000 tops, I think it was, and it felt safe because, like, you know, everybody around me were the faces were familiar, or I'd go to hockey game with my brother or some friends. Today, when I go through that area, because it doesn't have the traffic as it once had. Especially during the last couple of COVID years, you know, it has some negative perceptions as well, because, you know, there's some along on Riordan Street there to Gale, the Gale Crescent. There's some, you know, some shady people, shady neighborhoods, let's say, and it may have a bad rap. I know there's a lot of good people that live in those buildings, but also there's some activities there that, you know, probably unsafe for, like, you know, kids to walk through type of thing. So it's unfortunate, but I really believe if businesses start to spring up in the area, those empty lots start to, you know, kind of grow back. There's enough core businesses there, enough core, you know, let's say establishments there. Again, Westminster Church is there, St. Barnabas Church is there. I'm not saying that the churches are great, but, you know, you have these landmarks there that have been there forever, and that will, you know, just help augment whatever comes up there. That arena is special to me. Put something by that'll attract more people, and then, you know, I guess the narrative will change again. Like, to say it's like right now it's kind of a ghost town, and in the ghost town, and, you know, you'll see some of the homeless people. And it just drives a negative story. But at the same time, we're not far from changing the, you know, the story around. again, the right development, the right business to open up again. It'll give opportunity for everyone that's talked about to kind of, you know, get back in the right way in the whole Queenston neighborhood, specifically that arena area. I think that the story can change and become more positive again. But we need people to invest in the area. We need the city to invest in the area to clean it up and, you know, give it an opportunity to kind of get going again.
If you had to, I guess, maybe try to pinpoint when this transition in the community started to happen, do you have any idea of when you would maybe determine that time?
Yeah, so I left, you know, I'm just being simple. So I left the area in 1990 to go to university. But if you ask me in 1990, what's Garden City's arena like? My experience was all positive because, like, it wasn't far. It was 10 years away from meeting Rocket Richard. It was going to all these hockey games and watching the St. Catherine Saints play. Then I left the area for about 15 to 20 years. I left the area. But every time, like I said, every time I come back, I drive through the area and I see it. And then I saw some transitions happen, of course, like that area on on Queenston Street, right by the arena. It used to be one way. And then and probably in the late 1990s, they made it two way traffic, which is weird to me because now I'm driving, you know, two way. I feel like I'm in England. But that made, you know, downtown accessible. Like, you know, you didn't have to drive all the way around the city to get back to St. Paul Street. So, you know, I think that had started a lot of that. I always kind of say, I'm not sure if I'm off track here, but 1986 probably was a big transition year for communities and all. That's when Sunday shopping started. Prior to 87 or 1986, malls were closed. Businesses were closed on Sundays. We all learned how to drive on Sunday afternoons because, you know, we'd jump onto the Penn Center parking lot, learn how to drive because there's no cars there. And then after that, after 86, cars were, you know, Sunday shopping was there. So when the Sunday shopping started, it kind of gave one extra day for shopping. Not just in the malls, but to downtown. And then I think that's definitely probably impacts more of, you know, just the social aspect of it where, you know, people stop going to church because I want to work. You know, there's no excuse before or less excuse, but now I'm called into work, or, you know, as teenagers, you're offered a part-time job because, you know, stores need Sunday shop or people to work the Sundays. And I'm sure, like, it's not just the malls, but the various shops along St. Paul and Queenston Street were also reopening on Sundays. So the change was, you know, was not just slow, but it was gradual. And then one thing, another thing, and like I mentioned, the Sunday shopping, the St. Paul became two-way traffic. That part of St. Catharines on Queen Street became two-way traffic. What else happened there? I'm just thinking off the top of my head, like other things that the right around the arena there too, the old radio station was there. Was it 105.7? And a lot of it was, you know, these businesses that were there for a while, you know, as you walked by, you felt safe. These businesses aren't there anymore. Or the business would change frequently. Back in the 80s, business didn't change. Like, you know, if you had a business there, you'd probably be there for 5, 6 to 10 years. And now I see business open and close within 2 years. So that gives the unfamiliar territory to you know, the residents there. I might be out of line saying that, but it's when you have that, when you have, you know, just, you know, consistency in the neighborhood. I'm glad the arena hasn't been torn down, because that to me, that's a part of the, you know, history of St. Catharines. But again, the surrounding businesses there have changed. We need, like, more anchor businesses to stick down and, you know, kind of give people a place to shop, to go to, you know, get their car fixed or whatever it can be. But, you know, I guess to answer your question, how has it changed over the years? Can I pinpoint? I can't pinpoint, but I mean, I think just a gradual progression of how society works. Like, you know, if there's a place to rent, or there's a place to live, let's go live there. Where's a place to have a business? The city has expanded, of course, like the outlet malls have opened. Again, the casino opened, so there's a lot more options for people to do on weekends that live locally. I think if you go back to the 60s, when everybody shopped downtown, And when did that change? And I'd say, well, when the mall opened and then more malls opened, you know, I think that'd be a good exercise to kind of maybe put that on a timeline graph is when did the different shopping options happen? I think that's what kind of draws people away from downtown. But again, I see a lot of, you know, let's say not run down, but places ready to be developed in that area. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that they're just an investor away. You know, we at the church here next door to us is a hospital site. We're bugging the city. We're asking them, hey, what's happening with a hospital site that's half of Queenston Street in height? I think once that gets developed, that'll really get the ball rolling and get people confident to invest, confident to move, confident to live and work here in the area again. And of course, hopefully that will inspire, you know, things to happen in the old Garden City Arena again, right? Like as a venue, it has the real estate.
Absolutely. I think you're right. Kind of touched on this, but I'm going to ask anyways, just in case you have some other thoughts on it. But have you noticed any impacts to the state of the neighborhood as a result of the Garden City Arena and the presence it takes up?
Well, to me, the impact was early on when they had hockey, when they had events there. Like, you know, when you ask a local business, they loved the Friday nights because people will come eat at their places, like at the restaurant. People will come shop before the games. Now that venue is, I'm not saying it's empty, but it's largely unimpactful now because it's there's other places to have hockey in the city. So it's not as impactful as it was. But to me, it's, you know, the thing I like about it, it's still well lit. You know, and if you go there at nights, if you're walking on Gale Crescent, and it's kind of a shady part of the neighborhood, walk over to the arena and then it's well lit, and it's you know, city property type of thing, so you feel safe. So I think that it plays like almost like a safe haven to the neighborhood because I don't see much crime there. I don't see any graffiti, so it's well kept by the city or by the owners. So I think the impact is less, but it's still, you know, from a landmark spot, it's good to be there.
You've talked a lot about different businesses and establishments around the arena. I just wanted to give you a chance to, if there was any other businesses you remember from your childhood or businesses now that you think are connected to the arena or benefited from the arena in any way.
Back in the day, I went to, I think it was called Bob Patrick's Cycle and Sports. I know the son that's kind of used to work there. But Bob Patrick had the cycle shop on St. Paul Street, and we go there to get our skates sharpened. And as soon as your skates are sharpened, you run as fast as you can to the arena to go public skating. So that was something we did, you know, every 2 or 3 weeks to get your skates sharpened. Or if you need a new pair of skates, you also go to Bob Patrick's, and you know, you give me your old skates, he give you a couple of dollars, you pay $5 for a new pair of used skates, you run over to the arena, you test them out, and so that was something that was, you know, part and parcel of going to Rex Steimer's arena. If you went public skating, you had to get your skates sharpened. You fell a couple of times, and you had to go to Bob Patrick's. I also mentioned Herzog's. Herzog's back then was a store. Herzog's was like the, you know, it wasn't a cheap store, but you could buy everything. I remember buying my first polo shirt there. I remember buying hockey gloves, like Cooper gloves, like all the hockey equipment. It's still there, but it's kind of subdivided into like maybe 3 or 4 different businesses now. But back in the day, it was a lot of men's clothing. It was a lot of sporting goods that, you know, you want to buy the best hockey gear, you just went there. And that was like almost right across the street from the intersection of the arena. So we all went there to buy hockey tape. We all went there to buy, you know, a hockey stick, things like that. And we'd go over the arena and, you know, do what we could type of thing. So that was part of my childhood. So probably up to the mid 80s, like those two stores are important. Of course, they also sold bicycles and everything else. So the things that may not be associated with the arena, but we bought all our sporting gears from those two stores, or sport apparel from Herzog's. Again, my mom had that business right by the Tony's Tasty Street, right next door. So that was, you know, spent a lot of time there. The other one was when we owned 72 Queenston Street, or 76 Queenston Street, right next door. Still there. Burtnick Printing Press is still there, and that's been there forever, like, you know, probably 50, 60 years, I'd say. And, you know, that's always been, you know, we deal with local businesses, you know, they use them as a printer. They use theirs as, you know, just to, you know, any type of printing services. So that's always been, you know, part of the St. Catharines fabric, I think. And that's not too far down from the arena. Other businesses, I can't think of anything at the top of my head that was, you know, maybe printable, but it was, you know, whatever Avondale or local convenience store was there. Like, it's when we walk from our home to the arena, you know, you get thirsty, you walk into, you know, the other one is Fortis. Fortis had a restaurant, Fortis restaurant, I think just closed actually, but they also had a convenience store on Haines Avenue and Queenson Street. So that was always like a checkpoint, like, you know, if I was a little bit thirsty, you walk in, you pay a nickel, you get yourself something, like a treat. The Avondale is still there. The Avondale on Tasker and Queenson, that was another store that you can walk into, grab a treat, you know, grab something. We didn't have a lot of money, but I remember back then, like, you know, a quarter could get you a soda, could get you a bag of chips, get you a candy bar. So those are things I always remember. And it's nice that when you drive by, walk by that area, you see they're still there. That kind of puts it up, brings it all together. That whole experience of going to a Friday night hockey game at Garden City Arena included a couple stops along the way, included that hot dog at Tony's Tasty Street. And, you know, again, it felt really safe back then because all these businesses were thriving. People were there, and, you know, it was a fun place to be, you know, just to experience that Friday. And then, unfortunately or fortunately, I grew up and I had to move away from the city for a little while to you know, what you call this, get an education and go through life. But then when I come back here, when I see them, you know, it's nice to see our church still here. It's nice to see a couple Avondale still here. It's nice to see a Garden City still there. But I'm sad to see some of the supporting cast of businesses that were part of my childhood, whether they're profitable or not, they're not here anymore. But I want to say that we had this talk last year with some people in the Queen's Roundtable, thinking that, you know, there's nowhere to go but up. You know, it's a lot of businesses, a lot of houses are being boarded off. So I know they're being torn down, but they have to rebuild. And I think it starts with a big player. It's like the old hospital site. Once that rebuilds, I'll say it over and over again, I think you'll see a positive domino effect. And then that will bring opportunities to, you know, for venues again to perhaps host events. It's, you know, I really believe that. And I'm trying to be active in do my part, starting with that Westminster Church. But, you know, when our pastor said that, you know, Jerome, you have a story about Garden City Arena. I said, oh, yeah, I remember this French Canadian guy who everybody worshipped, you know, helped me get a bloody nose off my head. And I didn't know who he was. And years later, I realized it was Rocket Richard. And, you know, if you're a Montreal fan, Rocket Richard was like he represented Quebec, Canada, you know, for the better part of 40, 50, 60 years. So that was nice to kind of, you know, experience that.
Before I just wrap up with some finishing questions, I just wanted to check in if Daniel, if you had any questions for Jerome or any clarifications you needed.
Yeah, actually, hi, Jerome. I just had a couple things that I wanted to clarify. I remember I had a few people talk about the Queensway Hotel. Do you have anything you might want to say about that?
Yeah, so the Queensway Hotel is right in the corner of St. Paul, Geneva, and Queenson Street. I was a little too young to visit hotels back in the day, but that was part of the, you know, the landmarks. Like, it's that whole intersection was kind of crazy. Like, if you want to get from this part of Queenson Street to that part of St. Paul Street, there was like five intersection stoplight. That was probably the scariest intersection for a kid to cross back in the day. But I don't have any stories about the actual hotel. I just knew that I know where it is. And then once I'm there, I always knew that it was a tough street to cross because you don't know what stoplight to look at when it says walk or stop. And, you know, it's a very busy intersection. That's all I remember. And it still is a very busy intersection. But I think in later years, I may have had a friend or two that tenant Brock and lived there, I think. Because I remember I used to park my car around there. He'd come downstairs, I'd pick him up, and he was a Brock guy, so he just was it Brock Housing, some type of off residence housing or off campus residence. That's all I would. I have nothing really to add, but I just remember it was a busy intersection, and I was too young to stay in hotels then. So.
Yeah, and then actually my last kind of question that I was going to ask you here, did you have any experience, for example, with tourists or just tourism in the area? Was there a lot of that back then?
I would say yes, because we're part of Niagara, right? So Niagara, everybody wants to visit Niagara Falls if you're not from around here. But then we, Connaught School, like, when I went to public school, they did a lot of Wellenship Canal, you know, education to us when we were going to school, because that was local to us. So I learned a lot about, you know, the first Welland Canal, the second Welland Canal, and then obviously that was three or four later type of thing. So every time we have family and friends come there, they didn't come here to visit Welland Canal, but we forced to take them. We just take them, say, hey, look at the boats, look at these tankers that are here from around the world. And that's something that nobody really knows about. Like, maybe the museum people will, but like, if you come to this area, all you want to do is you want to go to Niagara Falls, because that's what you like. You know, let's say you're from Japan, you're from Europe, and they say, well, we land in Toronto, we want to see Niagara Falls, but then there's also Niagara Lake. There's also, you know, what does St. Catharines really have to offer? We say the Welland Canal. We always say that. And of course, you know, it's the Garden City, it's a grape city. We have wineries here, type of thing. So let's say in my later years, later meaning after high school, you know, from a tourism perspective, we love showing people the Welland Canal. We love taking people to Niagara Lake. You know, forget Niagara Falls. Okay, that tells itself. I did work for the Niagara Parks Commission through high school. I was a tour bus conductor, so I could take you along the Niagara Parkway and tell you what we had to say back then, and say, you know, over here, look on your left, look on your right, here's this and that. So I had a good appreciation of, you know, the tourism in Niagara Falls. It's too commercial for me now. There's too many casinos and everything else. But this here in St. Catharines, like that, it was always, we were taught about the Welland Canal through our public schools. And I, you know, I don't know it as well as I probably should, but it's from a tourist perspective. You know, when tourists ask me what else is there to see here besides the falls, besides the casino, I say, oh, let's look at the Welland Canal. And I think that deserves some, you know, some recognition always, because that's a big pipeway into, like, you know, how industry, how people kind of live through here or to get goods from across the world, right? So it's the Welland Canal is definitely Niagara driven.
I actually realized I have one other question for you here. So that was because you did mention earlier that you went to Toronto for a number of years, or I guess the GTA, but when you came back to St. Catharines, did your perspective change of the Queenston community?
Oh, absolutely. But I didn't leave and never came back. I left to live in Toronto, go to school, work, get my career going. And I always had family here. So I'd come visit. Like, you know, it wasn't like I left for 20 years and like, wow, come back 20 years later. I seen the changes to my years. So I kind of officially moved back here 2018 into the area. So I had seen the changes, but, like, you know, it's one thing to see it, but now to live it and to actually see day in and day out that the community has changed. Like, when I read those stats about the people that live in the Queenston area, they're no longer full-fledged families that, you know, have mom, dad, brother, sister, and a dog and a cat. It might be a single parent that's struggling. A lot of people that may be, you know, just it's not affluent. It never has been an affluent neighborhood, but at the same time, back in the day, like, you know, there was businesses here. You didn't need a car to go to work. Like, there's like right behind the Connaught Public School, there's a number of factories there, Foster Wheeler, a lot of, you know, that what you call the supported General Motors and the auto industry that were once prominent here in the city. Of course, GM is kind of almost gone. So the supporting businesses that supported GM are also on a downspin as well. So that's when you look at it from, like, you know, from the economy side, and that's what I've seen the most. Like, you know, forget how some businesses close here and there, but the economy is soured because, you know, it's St. Catharines was once, you know, just a GM town. And I'll tell you kind of a funny story. I was probably grade three, And my grade three teacher just scared the heck out of me because they said, I want everybody starting in the front, stand up, tell me what your dad, tell us your name and tell us what your dad does for a living. So the first person stood up, said, my name is Susie. My dad works at GM. Second person, my dad is, you know, Johnny. Like, he works at General Motors. 5 minutes later, it comes to me in the middle of the classroom. And I didn't know where my dad worked. So I just stood up, said, my name is Jerome. My dad works at GM. And I sat right down. I didn't know. But that's how prominent GM was back in the day, right? So when you think about it that way, that was, let's say, 1982, 83, to where we are now. A lot of people's dads don't work for GM here in the city anymore. But back in the day, 30, 40 years ago, most people's dads worked at GM. And if you worked at GM, you know, or if you didn't work at GM, you may have worked for an industry that supported GM, like any type of car manufacturing or, you know, any type of, you know, fabrication shops type of thing. So that's what, when I came back here, that I realized that because the industry is gone, like General Motors on Ontario Street is, it's a ghost town. The one by the other canal there, it's off Glendale. It's not as prominent as it once was. So a lot of changes has happened. Being a bit older, so I'm looking, always looking for, you know, opportunities for business and things like that. It's changed. I'm not talking just the, you know, the small little convenience store, but again, what St. Catharines is known for is no longer known as a GM town. Like, you know, it's known as, let's say, grape and wine. It's known as a casino town, or let's say, food, beverage, restaurant, business type of thing. Especially in the last couple of years, like, you know, we don't really have that identity anymore as a you know, automotive type of or GM type of town. So that's what I noticed in the last, and I'll say I noticed it just in the last few years, but I knew that's what it's coming towards. And when I walked by the St. Catharines area, the Queen Street area, I wish I could just go up to strangers and say, what do you do for a living? Where do you work? Like back in the day, people say, I worked here, I worked there, I work across the street. You point, I get my haircut here. If you live here, where do you get your haircut? Where, you know, not me, but you know, where do you guys go? Like back in the day, we had everything within an arm's reach of us. So when I'm here today, I'm always just questioning, where do these people work? You know, who lives here and what do they do? So that's the big, as an adult, as, you know, a maturing adult, that's what I'm always thinking of. Knowing that, you know, it was once like this, now it's different. The city has grown, of course. Like the population, what is it now? 135,000. I think back in the day when we first came here, it was still maybe 70,000. So the population has doubled, and not only the population, but the places to live, places to work has expanded. But, you know, growing up here, those are the questions I kind of ask, you know, where do people work? What's going to happen here? We no longer all work for GM. So what's going on? And there's still people. That's probably the biggest change I've seen just from a pure, like, you know, socioeconomic perspective of the area.
Yeah, that's really great. Thank you so much, Jerome. And I think I'll just let Paige ask you a couple more, right?
Yeah, I have one more question. I guess I'm wondering, as you know, as a Queenston resident, what are your thoughts and your hopes considering that the Garden City Arena is scheduled to be decommissioned this year?
I think the hopes are, you know, is you know, I'm not a resident here today, but I'm actively part of a, you know, of the neighborhood. My hope is that, you know, it will, let's say, the neighborhood gets rid of the biggest problem I think we have right now, and a lot of the local businesses complain about the homeless. I have some friends that are homeless. Like, you know, we employ some at the church here. They're just, you know, most of them are just really good people, but I think there's got to be some type of commitment. I'm not a mental health professional, but there's opportunity galore to kind of help them. And once they're helped, I really believe that's going to start the foundation to kind of help regrow the neighborhood. With regards to the arena being decommissioned, there might be need for additional shelter. Like, you know, it's in, let's say you help the homeless, you put them through some program to kind of get themselves back that to, you know, to working citizens. they need jobs. They might need affordable housing. Like there's a lot of housing. Like, as you guys know, it's, you know, when you graduate, it's going to be hard to buy a house, right? It's just the prices are there. So I think we all need to do our part to have available affordable housing, give people dignity to live in, to be independent. I think that's something that, you know, I think the city needs. The city needs to, you know, just kind of address that, you know, where we are with our street people or street friends or homeless, whatever you want to call them. But there's got to be, like, you know, programs and places to for them to work, to learn, to relearn, and to again grow so they can flourish. Once that problem is addressed, and it's not going to be something addressed overnight, but I really believe that if addressed sooner, I think that there's a good chance in the next few years that, again, this whole community neighborhood can you know, be well on its way up, like how it was for me probably in the late 70s. Maybe other people will say no, but back then we had everything we needed here. We didn't have as much, you know, the street people problem, the drug issue. But I think if those are addressed, and if there's, you know, places that could be developed for affordable housing or more shelters, shelters that are run correctly, shelters that address the real hard issues that we may not want to talk about, I think that will really help, you know, the city in general.
Absolutely, yeah. Is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you wanted to share with us or tell us about?
I'll say that I think I just kind of said it there. That what I really want to touch about there was that, yes, the arena had a big impact on my life when I was a kid, because that's what all the entertainment was. Like, you know, we watched hockey, we played hockey, we skated there. But the whole neighborhood, like that was like the icing on top of everything else. Like, you know, going to Avondale, the convenience stores, that was all good. Playing road hockey, the neighborhood has changed since my youth. I would like to see the neighborhood, like, you know, just kind of again grow again. But again, to grow again, like, you know, we're big advocates of let's redevelop what we have. Let's not let it sit there and go to waste. Let's address the real issues on the streets. Like you said, like, what's the neighborhood there like right now? It's not something you want to send your kids to right now on a Friday night, but I'd like it to, you know, once again be safe for you to send your kids there on a Friday night to watch a hockey game, or just to attend like a concert or whatever it is. As it stands today, I think that we as everybody, let's start with the city government, we have to address the issues of let's our street friends, and then, you know, the housing issues, the affordable housing issues. And that's pretty much, you know, one of my passions right now, to kind of do our part to ensure that happens.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Do you have any questions for myself or Daniel?
Please tell my Rocket Richard story. I just love that story. And I just wish I had an iPhone back then, but I don't. But to me, that's my best memory of Garden City Arena, meeting arguably the best hockey player back then and not knowing who he was.
I just wanted to thank you so much for taking time to tell us your stories. It was really valuable, and I really enjoyed talking to you.
Okay. Well, thanks, Paige. Thanks, Daniel. And reach out if you have any questions, okay?